Hi there, listeners of Illusion. It's taken a bit longer than usual to edit the next episode because it's a really, really, really long episode and we go off on a couple of big tangents. So we decided to edit together some of the interesting conversations that we've had to cut out of past episodes. They've been cut because they didn't fit the flow of the episode was running too long, or they just were irrelevant to what we were talking about at the time. Some of these have already been posted on Patreon under Temporal Tangents, and some of them you'll be hearing for the very first time. The first batch all come from Series 4, Episode 13. There was a lot that Jake Collins, our guest at the time, wanted to get across on the podcast, and a lot of it had to be cut out. So he's recorded his own introductions and explanations to each piece.
Greetings, listeners of Illusion. Jake Collins here to bring you two salvaged snippets from the podcast for Nightmare Series 4, Episode 13, aka the one where Dickon wins. Obviously, not everything from the original recording was going to find a place in the final cut of the podcast, which is always the case, but particularly as this recording came in at just shy of 3 hours. However, there were two parts that didn't make the cut that I thought were deserving of an airing in some form at some point, because I did think they were particularly interesting, and hopefully you'll agree with me. The first little bit of salvaged conversation relates to Doreen. And speaking of Doreen, one thing that the final edit of the podcast neglected to mention, at least verbally, was that this episode features the temporal discussion debut of Rosie Collins, providing the voice of Doreen. We're going to pick up at the point just after we've all agreed that Doreen on Nightmare itself was played by Samantha Perkins rather than Zoe Loftin, which, as I mentioned in the final version of the podcast, is something that Rosie managed to convince me of some years ago. A further thought then occurred, leading to something of a Doreen conspiracy theory, which is detailed here now for your entertainment. Now, I must stress, this is only a wild conspiracy theory. Unlike the other insights I've given to this podcast and my own series of 16 commentaries, it does not have demonstrable evidence from primary sources to back it up. It's just something for the listeners of Illusion to mull over. The theory goes like this. Doreen was a last-minute cobble. Someone was thinking, what are we going to put in now before the final chamber?
Yeah, I suspect that. The main reason is because the background is actually, although it's reshaded, it's actually the same one as level 2. That looks to me like they've thrown something in, prepared it in a hurry.
They've got Dorcas's room and flipped it. Yeah. They've got Doris's eyes, face.
Yeah.
You put that on the door and that's a cobble, isn't it? And who is there in the studio that day to provide a female voice for Doreen? Samantha Perkins.
Then they wouldn't have had to pay extra.
Exactly. If Zoe had been there, she'd have done it. There is something about the whole scene that does look extremely thuffed, shall we say.
There's also the fact that it backs up your theory that these questions, they're not really level 3 questions, are they?
They're thrown together at the last moment. I could answer all these questions without a moment's thought. Pickle's very unimpressed with them too.
Yeah, we get that at the end, don't we? The rule supposedly, although it's never mentioned in the series, which again points to your conspiracy theory, is that you need one correct riddle to open past the door in level 1, 2 corrects in level 2, and 3 correct to pass Doreen here. Now, I've started to think that's an urban myth. The supposal was mentioned on the KM forums many a year ago.
It's a supposition, but it's a very attractive one, likely one, neat one.
It's the problem is that sometimes when you've got something that looks that neat and tidy, that's what makes it tempting to believe it. If you actually stop and look at it, there's just nothing there to say it is.
Secondly, and lastly, we have a slightly longer clip in which the three of us discuss the wider mythos of Nightmare, which begins with unflappable podcast host Martin H. with his hand firmly on the tiller.
Why are we sorry? I've lost track.
So, you want to say you're... about Merlin's comment here about 1988?
Oh, yeah. Merlin makes a comment about the last time we saw a winner was 1988, which kind of messes with my mind a little bit. Continuity over the time period that the show is set is all over the place anyway. But I always just assumed that these were kids from the future who had found their way into the past.
Well, that was basically what Tregar was saying throughout the first couple of seasons. Yeah. It's now becoming more metaphysical. If you want to worry about it, you can just assume that Merlin was just referring to the time period that the castle connects to in the future.
I've said before that my theory is, and this is by no means any kind of official theory or backed up with any real facts or anything. My theory is that the dungeon and Nightmare Castle exist at all times. And that's why we have things like ice packs.
If we go back to Julian's quest, Tregar uses the term, this is where a number of different quests meet in a single place in space and time.
Oh, you're talking about Neil here.
Yes, you're quite right. You're quite right. Tregar refers to a number of quests meeting in a particular place in space and time, which suggests that the quest is actually moving not just through the dungeon, but through various different points in history. So it's almost as if it's saying the castle itself is an interface point, but the only time you can enter the castle is the one that Tregar is in, so to speak. There is something beyond just merely going back in time to enter Nightmare Castle. It isn't just that. Tregar, you could say, has been lifted from the era of King John and King Henry III. But at the same time, that period, he can go back into it if he wants to. But the dungeon is also connected to loads of other points in history. That's why you get Gwendolyn the Green Warden. That's why you get Merlin. That's why we get Atlanteans.
I really like the idea of the dungeon being timeless, like you said, Martin H. You said that on an early podcast. Mm. And I do like it when the characters chuck in knowledge of kind of our time, Merlin here, 1988. Tregard saying things like elves don't have advertising breaks, that kind of anachronistic yeah. world. Yeah. I really did engage with. I would say that this idea about the dungeon being timeless is very much backed up by two of the later Nightmare books, The Forbidden Gate and Lord Fear's Domain, both contain magical pathways between our world and the realm of Nightmare, which the child protagonists use.
Yeah, because the earlier books had all had Tregar very firmly set in his own time zone, whereas the later books, Tregar is treading around on the earth of the present day. I mean, is it his niece who appears in it?
Yeah, I didn't include the Dragon's Lair there because it's less of a Nightmare story, as we know, and more of a reused Dave Morris story about dragons. But yeah, it does have Tregar in the present day with William and Faye, the child protagonists there.
I know we're going completely off topic here, but I just want to ask this question. If Tregar has a niece, as established, who was her parents? Because Tregar is supposed to be the last surviving member of the House of Dunshelm. Norman slaughtered his family.
If you want to trawl through my DeviantArt gallery, you can find a fanfic where I explain that Fae is the child of Tregar's eldest brother. As we know from the first Nightmare book, Tregard had three elder brothers. He was the fourth and youngest of the Baron's sons. And yeah, Faye is the child of his oldest brother and sister-in-law. And through various unlikely happenings involving Merlin and time travel, she is in fact rescued from Veston's attack. And she ends up living in the present day.
Mm-hmm. Again, that makes sense in the context of the dungeon being a timeless place.
She's also married to William in those stories.
Which William is that?
They're in the Dragon's Lair book together.
All right, okay. I'd have thought the ideal marriage for her would have been Dugald.
She'd have to go and live in a whole other time period to marry him.
I suppose there is that. But it would make Dugald literally a member of Tregard's family.
Yeah, William and Faye forever. Join me on Team William and Faye.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I'll look out for that if I get time to, yeah.
And there we have it. I hope you enjoyed those clips, but if you didn't, don't let it bother you too much. For after all, it's all been merely an illusion, hasn't it?
The following clips are all cut from various random episodes and are presented in no particular order.
You think
People would recruit him just purely because he appeared in a TV series where people mentioned snuff boxes a couple of times. You know?
Yes.
A more intelligent recruitment policy would be hire somebody who appeared in Carry On, Don't Lose Your Head, because they actually had genuine scenes talking about and actually taking snuff in it. You know, if we get Kenneth Williams in, because he did a scene with the black fingernail, when the black fingernail is offering him some snuff, you know, and he says, "Nasty, cheap, aristocratic rubbish, and I love it." Yeah, let's get Kenneth Williams in to appear. I'm obviously Kenneth Williams would have been dead by the time they made Snuff Play, but you know, at least he'd have the experience. Yes. Maybe Jim Dale.
Maybe. Okay, so let's face it, Jim Dale's been dead since Carry On Columbus.
Has he? Well, his career has.
Yeah.
And rightly so. Judy and Clary should have disappeared off the face of the earth after Carry On Columbus as well.
It's not even a real Carry On film.
What?
It's not in any of the collections.
Well, there you go.
The DVD collections.
I mean, Don't Lose Your Head actually isn't a Carry On film officially. Although it,
is it not?
Although it's had all the usual regulars from the Carry On cast, it was actually not part of the Carry On film series. Its correct name is just Don't Lose Your Head. It isn't actually Carry On, Don't Lose Your Head. That's been added subsequently to make it because in every way that matters, it is a Carry On film.
So it's the Never Say Never Again of the Carry On films.
Pretty much, yeah. It should be in there, but officially it isn't. Officially, it was done by other people. Even though the cast was the same, all the production team were different.
Carry On Emmanuel is one of the ones that I always find missing from collections. But
and always looking out for it, aren't you?
Always.
Close attention to the racks of films and saying, right, where's films with Emmanuel in it? Yeah.
I think at that point when the Carry On films had stopped being innuendo and just started being about sex, that was it for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Must find a way of fitting this into a conversation with Kim sometime. But anyway...
Off topic, so I can cut this bit out. Speaking of throwing stuff in the trash, what do you know about the movie that was apparently proposed?
What I know about it was that it wasn't proposed. It was an online hoax.
Oh, that's a shame.
It was a website. I think it was put up in 2004, 2003, something like that. And quite a number of Nightmare fans got very excited about it on the forums. But then Nicholas Lamb, who was the original owner of Nightmare.com, he got in touch with Tim Child to check with him about it, and Tim Child said he knew nothing whatsoever about it. So at that point, we knew, somebody's trying to do us up like a kipper here.
Yes, the only way I heard about it was on an IMDb forum post.
Could be,
they don't exist anymore, so I can't check them.
In all probability, the person who started that thread on the IMDb forum was the guy who made up the hoax in the first place. So,
most likely.
Yeah, the rumor did spread to quite a few different websites. So, it's no surprise it wound up on IMDb as well. You know, that's the nature of hoaxes. You try to get it to spread around as far as you can to play a joke on as many people as possible. But
well, I wonder if part of it is that there actually exists a low budget movie called Nightmare that uses the same font on the cover.
Yeah, there is. There was I think it was about 5 years ago that thing called Nightmare. I've never watched it. I've sometimes thought about getting the DVD, but apparently it was an awful film, so I can't be bothered buying it. It does look like it has some similarities. But as far as I know, it has no links whatsoever to the Nightmare TV show. And I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have started work on it 12 years before they got around to releasing it. If it's a low budget thing, you don't really need... you don't really need 12 years to create it. If it's a low budget thing, you know, you don't want to keep people under contract for that long, because it starts getting expensive. Sort of by definition, the last thing you want to do with a low budget thing is contract people for 12 years.
Yeah. Well, okay, cool. I might
put that in any podcast, and
release that bit separately, actually. Yeah,
we can put that in any podcast, that bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where are we? We're in the Wellway room. So
again, the team uses the magic. Again, the team used magic to solve this particular problem.
So you must be, I'm just sort of doing the maths. You must be past a half century of episodes by this point. It's getting close.
It's something like that, yeah. It was 8, then 16, then 16. That was 40 at the end of the... Yeah, this is the 49th. It's the 49th episode.
Yeah.
So we're almost there. I think we should make a big point about that when we record the next episode's podcast.
Yeah,
it won't be the 50th episode that we've done, because we've done some other bits and pieces. But
yeah.
Like interviews with cast members. That it will be the 50th episode that we've done a full retrospective on. So, yeah.
Because I've never having created a podcast or anything, do you get lots of stats and things on how many people are listening, where they are in the world, and all of that sort of thing?
We get some, yeah. Mr. H is the one who actually receives. I mean, he's the one who controls it. I don't have access to that thing, because he doesn't trust me, because he knows I put up all the recordings that he's carefully edited out, including what I say during the pee breaks. Apparently we do, and I mean, we've definitely overall gone upwards, I think. First couple of episodes, I'm pretty sure about 15 people were listening, and 14 of them had thought they'd downloaded the wrong podcast. We've got a few hundred apparently following us now.
It's such a good idea. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's very exciting being part of it, because it's just... not only is it an excuse to watch these things again, but it's just, you know, you so rarely get an opportunity to hear other people talking about it, other than like a hazy memory of a thing they once watched.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
So in 2003, when Challenge started showing repeats of Nightmare, I remember my cousin came to visit, and she was totally dismissive of it. You write fanfics for a cheesy kids TV program that hasn't been shown in... I think you got this problem when nobody else in your family is a real Nightmare fan. Even Russell, who's helped make some of the audio plays that we've done, even he isn't really a fan of Nightmare particularly. You know, he knows it, he understands it, but it's he doesn't really like watching it particularly. It gets very, very sort of lonely when they haven't got anybody to discuss it with. So this is a way of doing that.
Yeah.
If we could get more people to come on as guests, and it would actually give them a little bit of an outlet for discussing what they think of these things.
I appreciate it is quite a niche thing, but then when you see the sort of the nostalgia fueled coverage of the Crystal Maze when they brought that back, you can see that if they did it in a clever way.
Yeah. People tend to forget just how many people actually watch Nightmare. The media keep on massively underestimating how many people watch Nightmare and how many people still remember it with great fondness.
Mm-hmm.
They often have forgotten what it was. You get caught by surprise. But I often, when you hear some of the documentaries that we were mentioning earlier, the mini documentaries about Nightmare, a lot of them always talk about it like this is a hidden gem of the past that's been completely forgotten. No, hundreds of thousands of people still remember it very, very fondly. Nightmare Live is always packed out wherever they perform in the country.
Yeah.
So there's loads of people out there who still remember it very well with great affection, and would love to find more people to talk to about it. And I'll say that's part of what this is. Hopefully, we can get other people. Hopefully, we get listeners to talk about it. We've already got loads of people writing in over Twitter to tell me that I'm wrong about the Veil of Fanburn, just for instance. So it's there. It does spark discussion. They also very quick to tell me I'm wrong about the Hall of Spears rather than the Corridor of Spears. So I love that. I love that they're arguing with me about it, because it means we're inspiring.
Get people getting really pedantic and angry about things, then you're on a winner.
You get people really fired up about nothing details like that. you're doing something people are passionate about. It's great.
I'll give you credit. You were quite gracious in defeat over the whole Van Burn thing. So
it's Van Burn.
And that's it for this special episode of Temporal Discussion. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and review on your platform of choice. It really helps us to grow our audience by reaching others who might be interested. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at NightmarePod, and our Mastodon is topspicy.social/@NightmarePod. If you want to support the podcast, we're Nightmare Pod on Patreon. Speaking of Patreon, here's a shout out to keepers of the Book of Quests, David N. Rabbit, Paul McIntosh, Peter Pulsford, and Scott Evans. Advisors, Benjamin Bloom, David Thompson, Kim Harder, which is a silly surname, Peter Sidon, Paul Craddy, Lord Entropy, where the O is a zero, and Stephen Whalen. And let's not forget Dungeoneers, Peter Corridge, and Adam Battersby. Support us on Patreon at Dungeoneer level or above to get your name mentioned on the podcast. Higher level perks also receive merchandise, have access to exclusive episodes, and if you pledge as a keeper of the Book of Quests, we'll even offer you the chance to be a guest on the podcast. Our website is nightmarepod.co.uk. If you're looking for Temporal Discussion merchandise, including t-shirts, stickers, and other products, it's at nightmarepod.redbubble.com. You can email us at podcast@nightmarepod.co.uk, and just keep telling yourself, it's only a podcast.
Isn't it?